Recently on the stage show, you met the Australian theatre maker Vidya Rajan, who talked about her performances as superfictions. And for her, a superfiction was a performance which exposed you to familiar things or familiar places in such a way that you experienced them as if for the first time. Well, visual artist and art writer Dr. Peter Hill got in touch with me to let me know that superfictions is a term that he's been using for 25 years, a term he invented. So everything old is new again. Peter Hill is in Melbourne with an exhibition of superfictions and of other things. And since it's such a tantalising term, I thought you'd like to meet him. Peter Hill, welcome to the show.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
So you got in first with superfictions in 1989. Why? How did it come up?
Well, 89, I was living in Edinburgh then and trying to run an art magazine and keep working as an artist at the same time, and interested in art and fiction and the gap in between, where the light gets in, if you like, between art and fiction. And,
yes.
So in 89, I created my first superfiction, which was the Museum of Contemporary Ideas in New York on Park Avenue. And it was supposed to be the biggest new museum in the world with its billionaire benefactors.
So there isn't really a Museum of Contemporary Art.
There isn't one at all.
Just said there is.
Just said there was.
And you've made people believe this to be true.
Yes. Well, it only existed through the press releases that I sent out globally, first from Edinburgh, then from Hobart, where I spent the next 9 years.
Right.
And I sent them to Reuters and Associated Press and all the main newspapers, broadsheets, as they then were. And artist friends, curators, and so forth. And I had no idea what happened to them. I just posted them off. And then it was in 1989, I was at the Cologne Art Fair the weekend the Berlin Wall was coming down, and I spotted a guy I knew, Dr. Wolfgang Max Faust, who ran Wolkenkratzer magazine in Skyscraper. It's a very good art magazine that was published in Germany and Austria. So I asked him if he'd seen my press release. And he said, "Oh, yes, what do you know about it? We've just written a feature story on it." And he obviously thought it was real.
Right.
And so I told him it was a fiction, and he went a little bit white and said, "For God's sake, don't tell anyone yet that it doesn't exist." Because the following week he'd been asked if he'd chair a meeting of German industrialists and curators to see if Frankfurt could build a museum based on contemporary ideas rather than contemporary art. So there's the kind of hoax element in April Fool's at one end of the spectrum, but for me, it's the idea that maybe through fiction, you can make things happen in life easier than through fact. Or
you could be seen as irresponsible, Pete.
Someone
who sends off press releases to news organisations telling the things that are not true. I mean, that's a major problem now in the world with people feeding fake news into the news world.
Exactly, yes. And I've always been interested in that. How do we tell what's true and false? And going back to the serious side of it from the philosophy of science, Karl Popper, Feyerabend, Thomas Kuhn, all looking at ways to either falsify information or verify it.
So Karl Popper said that you can't claim that a proposition is true or scientific unless you can devise a way in which it could be falsified.
Yeah, he used white swans and black swans as the example, and said you can cite any number of white swans, but you'll never be able to say all swans are white because you haven't yet seen a black one.
Right.
And then when you see a black one, you still can't say all swans are white or black because you haven't seen an orange one or a green one or
right.
a yellow one.
So that's not an absolute truth. You can certainly say there are swans.
Yes.
But the colour range of swans is potentially larger than experience would lead you to believe.
Indeed, yes. Yes.
Got it. Yeah. All right. So have any Museum of Contemporary Ideas actually happened?
Well, I've built fragments of them in different museums, Art Gallery of New South Wales. And I was in the Biennale in 2002 in Sydney. And there's a group I'm very interested in, we might come to later, the Situationists and their ideas on psychogeography and things. But one of their things was the detournement, turning one thing into something else. So I turned the Museum of Contemporary Ideas into a totally different superfiction called The Art Fair Murders, which speculated on what would happen if a serial killer was loose in the art world, killing someone at a different art fair over a 12-month period. So it was January, Miami, February, Arco in Madrid, March, Frankfurt, and through to Cologne in November and so forth, Los Angeles, December. So the idea a lot of the characters in the fictitious museum became characters in the installation slash novel, The Art Fair Murders.
I don't like you using the word slash when you're talking about murders.
Well, you should come and see my Herman Neat shower curtain.
it's getting a bit creepy. Now, okay, so the Situationists you refer to. So the Situationists were art practitioners of the 1960s, basically, who were political radicals, who were looking for ways in which you could use art to achieve political change. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, they were founded in 1957 at Cosio di Rosco in northern Italy.
And ended in the early 70s, yeah?
So yeah, but they were a huge influence first on the student demonstrations in 68 in Paris, and the Society of the Spectacle is the term that Guy Debord, their notional leader, used. But one of the members was a very close friend of mine, Ralph Rumney, and a lot of academics argue that he wasn't a founding member because he's not in the famous photograph of the nine of them at Cosio di Rosco. But Ralph, typically, he took the photograph, so he wrote himself out of history because he was behind the camera taking it.
I must have been there because I took the photo.
Yeah.
It's a sort of white swan, black swan problem, really, is because he's just saying he took the photo. We don't really know whether he took the photo. So are you a fellow traveller with the Situationists? Are you a Situationist after the event?
I think so, yes. And especially with their idea of the derive, which came from the flaneur and then went through surrealism with
okay, what's the derive? So the flaneur is the person who walks around, never quite part of the crowd, but observing the crowd and responding to them with a kind of sensitivity that the crowd itself might lack.
Yeah.
What's the next one? The derive.
Derive means a drift in translation. So you drift through a city, and it could be at one extreme turning a walk into poetry, or it could be a pub crawl, which everybody understands. You go from one bar to another. But they would do crazy things like jump on trams at random and get lost in their own city of Paris and explore different highways and byways.
What wacky people. So they're called the derive. That's the derive. A group name.
Well, you went on a derive.
Oh, you went on a derive.
So a derive was a walk.
We are learning so much. Derive. Okay.
And Ralph Rumney, he was he was married to Peggy Guggenheim's daughter, Pagene, who Pagene committed suicide
eventually. I love talking to you, Peter. This is just going in all different directions. Your conversation is like a firework.
It's a derive, yes.
It's a derive, yeah. Let's come to your show. So you've got a huge exhibition of the work of 25 artists from Australia, Singapore and Scotland. It's showing at the Grau Project, which is like, if you can imagine, Grey Project written in German, Grau Project, with a K in it. And that's in Melbourne in Clifton Hill. So this is, I guess, is this part of the Melbourne International Arts Festival?
No, this is just a standalone event.
It just happens to be happening. Okay.
It's at what I call the Berlin end of Smith Street.
Yeah. Yes. So we're talking to the whole of Australia, but we're talking about a sort of funky area of Melbourne. Yeah. So is there a unifying theme to this show that you've put together?
Well, the show started at the Venice Biennale in May. So it was a pop-up project that I decided to put on. It was when I was in that Biennale in 2002, one of the advisors was Ralph Rugoff, who is the director of the current Venice Biennale.
Right.
So I had hoped there might be an outside chance that I'd get into the Biennale, which didn't happen. And then a very close friend, Katrina Raymond, said, well, why not put on a pop-up project in Venice?
Oh, you can do that. You can just say, I'm going to pop up anyway
and turn up. So, So I put this was about 7 weeks out from the opening. So I contacted 25 close friend artists in those three countries that you mentioned and quickly put in applications to the Australia Council and the Creative Victoria.
Yes.
Neither of which came up. I learnt on the day I was leaving for Venice.
So how did you pay for it?
Well, these wonderful artists, and it's really friendship that holds this whole thing together. They all agreed they'd put $500 in each.
They all popped up with $500.
Bucks. So that produced 12,500, which rented a palazzo for a week and paid for full-page ads in Frieze Magazine, Art Monthly Australasia, and so forth.
Okay. So let's talk about some of these artists who popped up in Venice and who are now popping up in Melbourne. I like the sound of Patrick Pound's work. It's books. Tell me about Patrick Pound.
Books, yeah. Well, first of all, there's 25 artists and there's roughly 10 areas that they all fit into, and Patrick Pound would fit into the one of coincidence, perhaps. But there's adventurism, surveillance, alter egos, puns, street art, trompe l'oeil, style play, art and tourism, and of course, doubt and psychogeography. But Patrick Pound, the work in the show at Grau Project, which must be the biggest commercial space in Australia now. It's an old warehouse. It was a jeans factory, so it's got a New York loft feel to it.
Right.
But it's absolutely enormous. So in the middle of that, Patrick Pound has a row of, I think there's 53 books, and the first 26, all the paperbacks have got the name Light or Lightness in them.
Yes.
And the final 26 have got Dark or Darkness.
And don't tell me, the one in the middle's got both.
Has got both, yes. And it's Light and Darkness. Yep. So that's it. Yep. So that's Patrick Pound. I first saw that in the Geelong Art Gallery. Beautiful piece.
I love that. So there's a crossover point. Is it Ciri Han, is that he said?
Kerry Han.
Kerry Han. Yes. Kerry Han, C-E-R-I, Kerry Han. Her work's full of puns. His.
Full of puns. So every time I've met Kerry over the last 10, 15 years, you'll bump into him. He'll produce something from his pocket and give you a gift, which in situationist terms, that would be Potlatch. And the situationist magazine was called Potlatch, edited by a young woman from St. Kilda, apparently, in Australia, Melbourne. But so you'll meet Kerry and he'll hand you something, and it's a tiny little clothes peg that might be for a doll's house, but it's got the letter J on it, so it becomes JPEG.
Right. You know, as we're talking, yeah. I can't work out whether your world is a world in which everything is connected to everything else or in which nothing is quite connected.
That gap where the light gets in between the two, yeah. I think, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a sort of constellation of, I don't know, things that just trigger one another. Now, the name that really jumps out in the list of works that you've got is Michael Candy's Digital Empathy Device. Tell me about this.
Yes, well... Michael Candy, two of the artists come from the Gold Coast, Michael Candy and Luke Roberts, who's well known as his alter ego is Pope Alice. He opened all the great national exhibitions in Sydney recently. But Michael Candy, who's just left the Gold Coast to do a master's degree in Detroit, which will fit well with his background in robotics. But the reason I like the digital empathy device is it brings emotion and human life and travel into it. So I call him an adventurist, and it's adventurism. And the great adventurist, of course, was Ian Fairweather, who we spoke about earlier in the program, Travel Making Art. So Michael Candy, to summarize his project, he flew from Australia to Paris, went to the scene of the Bataclan massacres in 2016. In the video he made, and he didn't have an assistant, so it's and this video shows at Grau Project. You see him buying stuff at sort of $2 shops or 2-franc shops in Paris and then making something in his hotel bedroom, and it looks like he's making a bomb.
They don't have francs in Paris anymore. No, they have euros.
Yes, that's right.
I knew there was something wrong with that. Yes. Spotwatch wrong with this sentence. But do go
French,
on.
Yes. Sorry, I'm back in the 1950s. So he
back with the situationists.
Yes.
Yeah. On you go. Yes, please continue.
So it looks like he's making a bomb, but it's in fact his digital empathy device.
Right.
And then he does this amazing thing. He gets through the police cordon about 3 a.m, climbs to the top of the statue, the Goddess of Liberty at the Place de la République, and fixes this digital empathy device to the back of the statue's head. And when I interviewed him for a museum magazine, he told me that, I asked, how did you fix it? And he said, I guessed I could put 2 fish hooks under the statue's eyes with some fishing line. And that's how he put it. And what happens, it's linked by satellite to SatNav and so forth. And he's got access to a journalist map that shows whenever a bomb goes off in Syria. So when a bomb explodes in Syria, a few seconds later, the statue starts to weep, which I think is the most wonderful idea.
Well,
yes.
I mean, we've been having fun, but that's not funny.
No.
That's tragic.
It's tragic, and, but beautiful. And beautiful. I mean, such a beautiful work. So he doesn't know how long it lasted there because he thought he'd better get out of the country quickly. But he left, and it was certainly there for a while. So we've got that. It's on loan from the Justin Arthouse Museum. We've got that at Grau Project.
Now, there's so much else happening, but I do want to ask you briefly about Plato's Cave, because there are many dimensions to your incursion into the art scene in Melbourne. So Plato's Cave.
Okay. Well, in my original fictitious Museum of Contemporary Ideas, there was a bar in the basement where the philosophers would meet, and that was called Plato's Cave, and the slogan on the beer mat was linking drinking with thinking.
But hang on, your original Museum of Contemporary Ideas wasn't a real place.
No. Well, this is, so within the the imaginary Museum of Contemporary Ideas, there was an imaginary bar.
Oh, of course there was. Yes. What am I thinking? It was an imaginary bar.
Imaginary bar, yes.
Well, that's not much good. You're having an imaginary beer. There's no thrill in that, but on you go.
Well, so what happened in Venice, and we're repeating this in Melbourne,
yes,
in Clifton Hill,
yes,
Berlin End, there were four fragments to the whole project in Venice. So there was a derive, a walk through the city.
Yep.
And during that walk, I would take the group into this secret palazzo and show them the artwork. And it was a kind of anti-Biennale statement we were making. We didn't want too many people coming. We wanted to have long discussions about art and ideas. And then every evening, the Plato's Cave event was on Instagram. I would Instagram the photograph of a pub in Venice, and people would have to find it for that evening. And strangers would meet at this pub and, talk mostly about the Biennale. And the project was called Word of Mouth. So the word of mouth related to listening to what other people had seen at the Biennale and go and see the Lithuanian pavilion.
So we've got to wind up, but that is an option. That is an opportunity for people to drink and have ideas.
So that's it. And then 17th of October, we've got the two Singapore artists coming to do floor talks.
We'll have to read about that online because we've got to stop. Peter Hill is the curator of Word of Mouth, and you can experience it until the 26th of October at Grau Project, which is in Clifton Hill in Victoria.